Good morning.
Well, good morning, Faye. How are you?
I'm really kind of a little cold.
You know, it's been so up and down. It's been crazy. I heard that earlier this week we had a chance for a few more flurries, and I thought, oh my goodness, now here we go again. But then it's been slowly getting a little bit warmer, and I think this weekend is supposed to be pretty nice. We'll see some sun, you know, throughout the weekend and some warmer temperatures. I think it gets colder again next week, but, you know, we won't worry about that until we get to it. We'll just enjoy today and tomorrow.
Let me tell you something. It's this week it's been 40 or 43 every day.
Oh, no.
Yes, and when it's 43, I'm telling you, it's really about 30.
Yeah.
It's been a little bit chilly for me this week.
Yeah.
And then a little rain every day, you know. I mean, things are just, you know, I'm ready for spring, let's face it.
Well, now watch out, because you know what happens. We say we're ready for spring. We have about 3 days of spring, and then all of a sudden it goes from 40 to 125, and it doesn't stop for 6 months.
I know, but, you know, I how I like warm weather, so,
that's true.
You know, I'm ready to take it on.
That is true. You've had enough of this winter and this fall and whatever else.
Yes, and I'm out of butane. The fireplaces have quit. I'm out of butane.
Well, is the guy going to come?
I've either got to order butane or it's got to get warm, one way or the other.
Well, I would say when it comes to both of those options, the only one you have control over is get more butane.
There you go. I knew you'd say that. you know, these butane tanks for fireplaces are not very big.
Really?
I've already run out, and winter's not even over.
Hmm. Maybe they need to make bigger tanks.
That's what I'm thinking, because I don't use the fireplaces a lot, but my gosh, I would have thought it would have lasted all winter.
Well, geez, imagine how low it would be if you turned on the fireplace every night.
Yeah, I mean, it wouldn't even last as long as it did.
My goodness.
And I think I ordered it in October, and we probably didn't use it till December.
Oh, no.
And it's already gone.
And you're already gone. See, they probably ought to put those huge, gigantic tanks underground and just have a guy come out and, like, fill it every once. Kind of like they do at the gas station, except with, you know, fireplaces.
Yeah. Well, I know our tank, the guy just comes out in his little truck, you know, and fills that little tank up out there.
Huh. Well,
but it must not be very big, I can tell you that.
Clearly, they need to do something about the size, because that's just, if you're running out, you know, this fast, my goodness, you're going to end up spending a fortune.
I know. But we do like a nice fireplace sometimes.
Oh, yeah. It's very nice, especially if you get one of those rare snowy days like we had. That's always nice.
That's right. And the little children like turning it on.
Yeah.
And they'll sit down in front of it and watch the fire.
Yeah, it is neat. But there's nothing worse, though, when you go to turn it on and there's nothing there and it's like, oh!
That's right, because I went in there to do that and the flame was just the pilot light.
Yep. You plan on having a nice evening and it went from nice and relaxing to all of a sudden mad.
That's right. There was nothing there and I had to tell the little children that we had run out of butane.
And children don't understand.
They do not. I mean, they expect you to have everything at all times.
Yeah, it sounds like you got to get the guy on the phone and blame him.
I'm going to have to get him on the phone and say, you know, we need service a little more often, I do believe.
Yeah, we have some upset children who
that's right. They need their fireplace.
This
oh, my gosh.
This is Your Money with Faye Bagby. Your phone number is?
It's 877-588-3330. That's 877-588-3330. And we're at 3105 Big Spring, right next to Ivy Cottage.
Now, let's talk about making some money, because I think sometimes people look at this and they say, well, you know, when it comes time for, you know, planning retirement and growing my wealth for retirement, I think the R word tends to intimidate some people sometimes. So do you find that people, maybe if they look at it with a different approach, they might feel a little bit better about it? Instead of looking at it as saving for retirement, if we look at it as though growing our wealth, maybe it might bring a little bit more people to the table and actually get people going. Do you think their approach makes any difference at all?
Well, and I don't know. Everybody's approach seems to be entirely different. You know, my approach is if we gather up this money now, we're going to be able to enjoy it when we retire.
Yeah.
And we're going to be able to do a lot of things if we really do it right. If we don't, you know, there's going to be a lot of money missing.
Mm-hmm.
So the best way to do it is start early, you know, 50 years old, and then at 65 or 70, you've got plenty of money. You've got enough you can do. You can go around the world twice.
Yeah, you could. And when you mentioned that, it kind of something came to my mind. I wonder if, you know, this is just a matter of, you know, breaking down some walls, breaking down some stereotypes and some images and things like that people have. One, saving for retirement means you can't live your life because, well, I'm taking a chunk of my money that I've got now. I'm putting it into this thing, which means I can't go out to have steak every night, or I can't maybe, you know, get the fancy car or the big truck that I want, or maybe the boat that I've had my eye on. But really, if somebody does this right, is it fair to say that they can do both? They can grow their wealth for retirement and still have a good quality of life now. Is that possible?
I think so. I think that the people that really have a lot of money, the people that have come to me that have, like you say, a large amount of money, is they were always conservative, and they still are. I've got people worth several million dollars, and they're driving pickups that are 10 years old.
Mm-hmm.
Because they're comfortable with it. You know, they don't need a new flashy pickup to make them happy.
Yeah.
Now, some people do. They need a new pickup every year or every 3 years. But then we've got some people that like what they're driving, and they just, you know, they just like it, and they're not going to give it up.
Yeah.
So it depends what level you want to live. Do you want a new pickup every year or every 3 years? You know, it's how conservative are you? Do you have a Lamborghini
mm-hmm.
or a Maserati?
Hmm.
You know, and I know people that have those leased, and they don't have any money.
Huh.
You know, they have a little bit of inheritance, which will run out in a couple of years, and I'm curious what they're going to do.
So you have people really on all areas of the spectrum.
We have people on every. We've got a lot of really conservative people. We've got some mid-conservative, and then we've got some that have not saved enough for that rainy day
mm-hmm.
because they were doing a lot of things they wanted to do while they were young. But, you know, that million-dollar house they bought at 40 is not paid for. You know, I've got some people like that. Then I've got mostly conservative people. Their homes are paid for. Their cars are paid for. They have no debt. So, like you say, they could have a new boat or a new pickup every year if they wanted it.
So, obviously, you've got, you know, people who are already wealthy who have been smart with their financial management, and that would not be a problem in any situation. But what about the people, like you said, you know, who may have bought that million-dollar home? It's not paid off. They're not ready to go. And here they are, you know, say 45, 46. Like you say, the house is not paid for. They have a long way to go, and they're starting to get antsy. They're thinking, Faye, I don't know what I'm going to do. I've waited too long. I still have several years before this home is paid. I can't afford to you know, take money out of my day-to-day living and invest hundreds of thousands of dollars in something for wealth. What do you tell somebody in that situation?
Well, it's a hard decision. It's up to them. But most of my people, when they come to us, you know, they're conservative in their ways. And so they haven't spent all their money on toys yet, you know. Now, I know some people, they invest with us, and then they do other things too. But I find that the ones that are making money with us are the ones that consistently invest, because I see their names on the checks all the time. You know, when a policy is maturing, they're always there. Their name is always on the maturity list. So, and they do it consistently. They have IRAs, and everybody that has an IRA seems to be doing well because they continue to put money in their IRA or their 401. And those are the people that are really going to do well in life because they've saved every year, you know, like 10% or some manner for 20 or 30 years. So they're going to be okay. It's the ones that haven't, that are going to have a hard time having enough to retire.
I guess I'm trying to kind of figure out, because so many people are on so many different places in life. You know, some are already, you know, well on their way and doing just fine. Others, you know, are somewhere in the middle. And then others haven't really done anything for investment other than, you know, what 401k they may have in maybe one job. So how many people, and not an exact number, but how many people, if any, come to you right off the bat and haven't done anything for retirement planning or investments?
Very few, very few. They all have some amount, you know. Some are going to have a lot less because, like you said, they haven't done a real good job on doing anything toward retirement. But most of them have got $250,000, $350,000 at least. Mm. So they've got that much to start with. And then we've got some come and say, okay, right now I can't put but $100,000 in. But then during the year they put more and more in as they get it in. And they're saying, okay, I want to get more money over to Faye. I want more money to invest. Then we have the people that come with a lump sum. Say, okay, Faye, here's $750,000 or $1 million. Mm-hmm. How many policies can I get in for that kind of money?
Is it a decent plan if somebody, who say, was on maybe the lower end of investments, maybe they've got a little bit, you know, kind of like you say, a couple hundred thousand, maybe they come over and this is the first time they've actively really done an investment type of thing? Because if they've got a 401k, odds are they're probably not that involved. They probably, you know, their broker has put their money wherever they put it. And then whatever happens, happens. But with something like this, they're a little bit more involved. It's not one of these things that takes up time, or they have to, you know, do you know, hours and hours of, you know, accounting work or anything like that. But this may be the first one that they've actually been physically, personally involved with. Do people find it maybe intimidating when they come over the first time, or are they pretty easygoing?
I think most people are pretty easygoing. And I have people that, you know, have got their money scattered around, and they come and say, Faye, I want to put it all in one place, mm-hmm. you know. And so, you know, we'd like to put this money with you. And lots of times it's people that have been listening for years. You know, people procrastinate. We haven't talked about procrastination lately, but people procrastinate and procrastinate maybe for 6 months before they come in, or maybe even a year. You know, and people say, well, I've been listening a long time. I've been intending to come, but now we're coming to see you.
And that whole time they've intended to come, the whole time they've been procrastinating, their money's just sitting there, and that's, I guess, income and wealth that they've missed out on, right?
I think so. And a lot of people said, you know, we were going to do it, and we just didn't get around to it. In other words, it wasn't a priority getting that money invested. And then, I don't know, maybe their statements from their broker, even though the stocks are up right now, a lot of them didn't make that money. They made it in New York, but it didn't seem like it spread everywhere.
Is there a like a catalyst event that happens when somebody does say, hey, I've been listening to you for 6 months or a year, like you mentioned, and then all of a sudden they come in? Is there something that happened to trigger them to say, whoa, we got to do something, let's go talk to Faye?
I think it's they know a lot of people. They have a lot of friends that have investments with us, and I think the friend probably says something to them about how much they've made lately, what they made this last year, and so they said, you know, we need to go talk to Faye. You know, so-and-so has their money with her. Mostly everybody that comes, they know someone else that has their money with us. That's made a lot of money.
I know you get a lot of referral business.
Yes,
and I know,
we do.
Yeah, and that's really kind of a big deal. It's much a bigger deal than I think people really give it credit for. Because when you're willing to put your own reputation, you're willing to put your own relationships with other people, whether it's friends, coworkers, family members, whatever the case may be, you're putting that relationship on the line. And not many people are willing to stick their neck out and recommend something that they have found personally to be terrible. So
that's right. If it was terrible, they wouldn't. But we have recommendations, you know, almost weekly. And I'll say, well, you know, how did you hear about us? I say, well, and they'll give me the name of the friend, you know, that recommended us.
Mm-hmm.
And then they'll give us the name. If it's a relative, they'll tell us what relative, you know. And it's real funny. I have two brothers here in town, and they invest regularly with us. And the other day, I couldn't reach both of them. So I said, okay, we'll go on. We won't put them in this policy. Well, I reached one of them, and he got in the policy. The other one didn't. And I got a call from them the other day. They were together. They said, Faye, why isn't my brother in that policy? Everybody talks to each other. And I said, because we couldn't reach him. I'm sorry, he didn't get in the policy. He said, well, what about my mother? I said, your mother's in the policy. Don't worry about her.
So it's
this
like
is the way it works. Everybody, and at work, they talk to each other. And if one of them made money, they're liable to call me and say, Faye, was I in that policy? You know, my friend here at work just got paid. So that's the way it works.
So do people find that, you know, say if one person is in and maybe another person hasn't even come to talk to you yet, does it take several times, you know, to maybe say, you know, hey, I made $24,000 last week. It was deposited in my account. And then maybe a few months later, they come back and say, yeah, I just had another $18,000 put in my account. Another policy matured. And then a few months later, hey, they just deposited, $15,000 in my account because another policy matured. Do people hear that over and over, or does it take just one time and say, hey,
I think just one or twice, and they say, you know, we've been with Faye several years, we're making money, and we have a lot of policies, this is what we're making. And then they say, oh, you know, I probably need to go talk to her, and they do.
I feel like this is going to be an obvious question, but I'm going to ask anyway. Do you recommend that people who are with you tell people about a life settlement investment?
I don't ever say anything one way or the other.
Ah, interesting.
You know, that's just the way we operate. We always just say, you know, here's what you've made, here's how much you have with us, and we tell them, you know, all about that. And then it's up to them. And it's like if someone comes and sees us and they don't come back for a month, I don't call them.
Interesting.
It has to be their decision.
So there's no pressure whatsoever?
Absolutely not. If you don't come back, you know, and you wait another year, it's too bad. But I've had that happen. I've had people, maybe a year later, they show up and say, well, you know, I came and talked to you about a year ago. And I go, oh, okay. And it may be a month. And usually people come back within 2 weeks. If they've been there, they'll come back in a couple of 3 weeks. But, no, we've had people wait a year to come back. And I've already forgotten about them. I've already gone on to something else. You know? I mean, we're moving along. And when people, it has to be their decision. And lots of times people say, well, aren't you going to call that person back? I say, no, I'm not going to call them. You know, it has to be their decision. They've got to wake up and say, you know, we need to come back and see Faye.
So you pretty much just invest people's money, you do what you do, and let the investment and the profits speak for themselves.
That's exactly the way it works.
Wow. That is more upstanding than what you see in most places. I'll tell you that. That's pretty fantastic. That's really great. That's got to take a lot of pressure off people, knowing that, you know, they're pretty much in control of whatever happens.
They are. They're in complete control. It's up to them how they want to invest their money. If they want to be sure they're going to get their principal back and their interest, you know, this is a good way to do it. Because you know you're investing in a life insurance policy only. And when you invest in a life insurance policy, you know you're going to get paid.
Mm-hmm.
You know, so that takes a lot of the worry and the speculation out of the investment. Because you know it's a life insurance company. You know it's an A-rated company. You know they have to have been in business a long time or we don't do it. In fact, this week they sent me over a policy. We looked at it. It was a $500,000 policy, and then we looked to see who owned it. Well, First Colony Life is owned by Genworth. Genworth, we have not been able to touch them now in 3 years because their rating has just gone down. It was a B++. Now it's just a B-rated company, so we can't touch them. So we had to turn the policy down.
What would cause something like that, a company to get a downgraded rating?
Well, apparently it's due to their financials. If they don't have as much liquidity as they should have, for one thing. And you have to keep a certain amount of liquidity. And it's about paying your claims. How fast do you pay your claims? You know, all this matters. And all this is documented.
So it may not be anything that's, you know, to a commoner, you know, like us, who are not in the life insurance business, it may not seem like anything big. You know, if a claim is paid a little bit late, or maybe several claims are paid late, it's not as though they've done anything necessarily that's been, you know, bad or illegal or anything like that. It's just, I guess, a matter of, you know, how fast they expedite these things.
That's exactly right. And the insurance commissioners are the ones, you know, they're the ones that audit, and they audit twice a year. And whatever that audit shows, that's what your rating is. And every company, if we don't already know that they're A-rated, we go look them up on AM Best and say, okay, we've got to check this company and see if they're still an A-rated or an A-plus company. If they're not, you know, we can't touch them.
And I guess the bottom line of all this is that the standards are very, very high for the companies that you're dealing with here, that you do business with.
That's right. We're not going to do a B-rated company, not now, not ever. And a lot of people say, well, you know, you could buy this policy for a lot less because it's B-rated. I said, yeah, but I can't sleep nights either, you know. I've got to be able to sleep nights not worrying about it, too.
Yeah.
So that's what we attempt to do. Every policy that we buy, first of all, we want to make sure it's going to live up to our expectations. Is it going to come due when we think it is? And sometimes they come due early. Then sometimes they're right on it or a month late, 2 months late. Then there's some that have gone a year or two late. So something can happen to the best of policies and make them late. But lots of things make them early. Like they're a lot sicker than what we thought. The doctor's saying they're this sick, and they're really a lot sicker than that.
Yeah.
And sometimes they come due in 3 months, 6 months, less than a year, because they are so sick.
Yeah. Let's talk about the investment for a second. Let's talk about what a life settlement is, because I'm sure, you know, there's a lot of people that are very familiar with the process because we talk about it a lot. But then there's others who may not really understand the investment itself. Maybe all they know is, you know, whatever their 401k does or whatever's happening on Wall Street. And this is very, very different. A life settlement is an opportunity to invest in a life insurance policy. Is that really just the bottom line right there?
That's right. It's a life insurance policy, and we take it a little step farther. We're not buying just a life insurance policy. They must have stage 4 cancer. We're not going to buy one that hopefully is going to go 5 to 7, 10 years. When you buy a policy and there's nothing wrong with them, you're not going to have any cash flow.
Yeah.
Because it's not going to come due for years. And by then, you're going to be really scratching your head wondering where your money is if it goes 5 to 7 years. So the people that buy those is the mutual funds. They can afford to wait 5 years or 7 years or even 10. Mm-hmm. But even them, they need cash flow like the rest of us. So I don't know how that's going to come out. I'm anxious to find out in the next few years about these policies they bought that there was nothing wrong with the people.
And because when you invest in stage 4 cancer, you know that the policy is going to, mature, and people will get paid a little bit faster than, you know, some of these other policies of people who are just wanting to sell it for whatever reason. These mature a little bit faster.
That's exactly right, because we know that pancreatic cancer, we know stomach cancer, we know colon cancer, and we know breast cancer. Mm-hmm. Lately we've done several of throat and sinus cancer, and they didn't live any time. They didn't even make it to the what the life expectancy was. So we know which kinds of cancer usually mature the fastest.
Mm-hmm.
And, of course, any of it, if it is spread, like to the lymph nodes, the skeleton, liver, all this, they're not going to live long. And when we're reading these policies over and over again, it tells us what the progression is, how far it's spread, what they're taking, if they're on methadone, if they're on really extreme pain medication, if they're obese, if they've lost 50 pounds. We're looking at all that and tying it together and saying, okay, this is what makes a good policy.
You know, and I know we talk a little bit about how length of policies can change. I mean, doctors have obviously all kinds of medical data, and they do their best to come up with the life expectancy of the policyholder. In the end, we don't really know. Things can happen. Maybe they may go a few extra months than what the doctors think. Maybe they come in, you know, the policies mature a little bit early. I don't know about you, but I don't recall ever hearing of any stage 4 cancer that went on, say, you know, 5 years. Usually when somebody's diagnosed with stage 4, it's pretty serious and it's going to be pretty quick, which means a faster return for the investor.
That's right. Now, we have had a few that after they got it, they didn't go into remission, but they went and had these clinical trials. Well, now, that extended their life. It didn't cure them, but it extended it like an extra year going into clinical trials. So we try, you know, to see about that in advance. You know, several years ago, we had a guy that wanted to sell us his policy. Then at the end of the deal, it said he was going to go to Poland and get a liver transplant. And we're going, oh, no, we don't want him to sell it to us and go get a liver transplant,
yeah,
which would save him. You know, so we're reading all about them, you know, all the different things that could go wrong and the things that could go right.
When you get these life insurance policies and people look at them for the first time and they say, or maybe not a first time investor, but they look at the actual policy for the first time and you say, okay, this is a breast cancer policy. The doctors think it may come in, and I'm just making stuff up here, maybe 20 months. What does that actually mean? What does the investor take in? How does that information help them decide if it's a good policy?
Well, they're reading, of course, what kind it is. They're reading all the same information I am, and it depends. If they think 20 months is good for them, then they're going to go in that policy. A lot of people like short-term. I prefer 28 to 30 months. Now, that's me. That's not them. And the reason is, it seems like on 28, 30 months, it seems to me, it pays a little better, and sometimes it comes in quicker, you know. And I like them. Now, sometimes we'll get a 12-month or 18 months, and they live less than 12 months. And then sometimes 12 months is not right. It may be 18. But it's usually pretty close to what the doctors say. And the doctors will tell us, you know, how many times they've been in and out of the hospital, if they've gone to hospice, you know, all the different things that can go wrong.
Is there a particular policy, a type of cancer that you think might be, and I know you don't have the numbers in front of you, so this is just kind of off the top of your head. Do you find there's a particular type of cancer that is an investor favorite?
The pancreatic cancer is their favorite.
Okay.
And lots of times somebody will say, no, I'm going to wait for pancreatic cancer. And I'll go, oh, no. But breast cancer is my second favorite, and maybe it's close to pancreatic because all but three have come in early. You know, we've done $8 million in the last few years of breast cancer, and three of those went over. Hmm. Out of all of those millions of dollars worth of breast cancer, only three went over.
That's pretty amazing. I mean, those are great odds for an investor.
And people don't realize that we go back and take a sampling. Like on that, we went back and looked at all the breast cancer, looked at when they came to us, what stages that breast cancer was in, and why all these others came in early. And the ones that came in late, they were not quite as sick as everybody thought at that time. But the others, they all came in early. And, of course, the other thing is if they're doing alternate medicine and the doctors, you know, yell about this every day. When they do alternate medicine, they come back home, and there's very little they can do to save them.
Because at that point, they haven't done the traditional chemo and radiation. And so all they've really ended up doing is letting the cancer get more aggressive and take hold even stronger. And now there's even more to battle in it. It becomes much more impossible.
It is. And I read a lot of the reports, and the doctor will say, you know, it's too late for us to operate. It's too late for us to do anything. If you had stayed in the United States, you know, we could have done this treatment and we could have prolonged your life. It might not have saved you, but it would have prolonged it. And this way, it's going to be fast. And, you know, we've lost four people this last year to cancer. Four of our clients that were investing with us, they have passed away due to cancer.
Wow. And so you've seen it from the other side of the fence now.
Yes, we have. And, of course, we lost Kimberly. You know, she got lung cancer, and we had no idea that this cancer was this aggressive. I mean, she got it like in late fall, and she picked the doctor she wanted in the hospital, and later UT said, oh, no, she should have went, you know, to us or to another big hospital, and they immediately did cancer on that first lung and cut a piece of it off. So we assumed she was okay. So then she goes back, and they say that she has a large tumor below her stomach, that's got to come out. Mm. And they were saying it wasn't malignant. We never knew for sure. But then they go back, they look at the other lung, and they say there's all kinds of little nodules in that lung. So we thought, you know, they'll just do radiation, she'll be fine. And, you know, she passed away, you know, in April. I mean, it was fast.
Wow.
Fastest lung cancer I've ever heard of.
Wow, I'm so sorry for your loss. That's
yeah, I
terrible.
Mean, it was a tragedy beyond, because right there in our office, and we didn't see she was dying.
Yeah.
And wow. They were giving her blood transfusions, and she'd be in and out of the hospital every other week. And something went wrong. I still don't know what it could have been. But it taught us a lesson, you know, about what can happen on something like lung cancer.
Mm-hmm.
It could be that fast.
I mean, that is, you know, and it's one of those things that you can't see on the outside. I mean, it's going on the inside, but you can't, it's not like, well, I've got a bruised thumb, or, you know, I broke my arm and I've got a cast on, and so we can see it. You can't see cancer. And so a lot of these doctors, you know, they rely on their experience. They rely on, you know, the tests. They rely on things like that. But you never know. There could be, you know, something else going on that they can't detect. And so sometimes these policies do come in faster than what they think.
Yeah, and that was a 6-month deal. We had no idea. So anything can happen on cancer. You know, there's things we can't see, like you said. And on hers, we did not have the doctor's reports. So we couldn't read anything about what was going on. We were just talking to her and did not realize that it was going to be fatal.
Wow.
So all of these cancers react different. And some of them, you know, they're going faster than the treatment, let's put it that way.
Yeah, it seems like, you know, as we've talked over the last several years, it almost seems like if we step back and take a look at the big picture, it seems like a lot of these cancers are getting more aggressive than maybe they used to be even a few years ago. Now, I don't mean that as like a medical statement. It just seems like a general observation from this side of the fence. Would you say that's accurate, or is that too far to go?
Well, I think they're very, very aggressive. And, you know, I don't know if, like you say, if they're more aggressive than they used to be. They keep talking about curing cancer, but it's not happening around us.
Yeah.
You know,
yeah.
Because we're having so many of these, you know, come due.
Yeah. We should also point out that when we're talking about investing in these policies, it's not a matter of somebody has had to surrender it against their will. What happens is, and this is a very important part of the process to understand, is that when somebody's diagnosed with stage 4 cancer, the treatment is very, very expensive. What did you say, $100,000 a month?
It runs about $100,000 a month. Mm. And you've got to have a lot of money, or really a lot of insurance, in order to handle it. And all the people that come to us, you know, they need the money for treatment. It doesn't matter if it's a $100,000 policy or a $1 million policy, you know. And then we have people that are wealthy and they're really going for some high dollar treatment, and they'll say, okay, you know, I've got a year and a half, I need to just go ahead and sell my policies. And they may have $3-1 million policies. But they're going to use at least $1 million or $2 million of that for treatment, and then they're going to settle with the family. A lot of people want to go ahead and settle with the children, and they don't want to wait and for it to be in the estate. And we have that happen a lot.
Those are for more wealthy people who are looking to sell, right?
That's right. We have a lot of those. And they know how they want to settle their estate, and they want to do it now and get ahead of this. The other thing is when our providers bring us these policies, lots of times they'll tell us how many times they personally know how many times this person's been in and out of the hospital.
Mm-hmm.
And we've had a couple of them that we were ready to sign, and we were delayed because they were in the hospital and could not sign the releases. And so we waited, you know, like 30 days before we were able to get their signatures. And when they came home, then we finished up the policies.
Yeah, and so these people need to sell their policy. They need the lump sum of cash to go ahead and do the treatments because they're so expensive. And so that's why somebody has to be on the other side. I mean, you can try to sell anything all day long, but if nobody's there to buy it, it doesn't do any good. And so you're doing what you can to help people who are in that situation take away, you know, because a stage four cancer diagnosis is very, there's a lot of things that happen with that. And any chance to take out the financial worry of, my goodness, how am I going to afford the treatments? You know, that's just, it helps the person in that situation. So it does end up benefiting the policyholder who needs to sell it. They get that big lump sum of cash. This is Your Money with Faye Bagby. Your phone number is?
It's 877-588-3330. That's 877-588-3330.
And we should also mention that your website is AmericanFinancialMidland.com. People can go there and find out all kinds of information, money that people have made and things like that, so they can see real figures for themselves. Now, every Saturday morning around this time, we get into trivia. So what's our topic this morning?
It is about crepe myrtles.
Ooh, I love crepe myrtles.
I do, too. They're one of the most beautiful bushes in the world. Where do you think crepe myrtles came from?
Knowing you, I'm going to say someplace in Texas. I'm going to say, let's see, they have to be, I'm going to go someplace in East Texas.
Oh, I'm talking about how they got here. How did they get to Texas?
You're going back even further. Golly, I don't know. I have no idea.
They came from Asia.
Really?
They came from the Chinese.
Oh.
The Tang Dynasty.
Wow, that's several centuries ago.
Yes, like in 618 to 1907. Yes.
Wow.
In 1786, the French botanist, André Michaux, he planted crepe myrtles in his gardens in Charleston, South Carolina.
Wow.
Yeah, 1786. Today we have 110 crepe myrtle varieties. Did you know that?
I had no idea.
Oh, and they range from 3 feet to 30 foot tall.
30 foot? I've never seen anything that big.
Yes. But they brought the plants and the seeds from India. George Washington had his in Mount Vernon. Thomas Jefferson planted them in Monticello. It spread to the South. And then Maxey, wife of Confederate General Samuel Bell Maxey, brought up the first crepe myrtles to Texas in 1857. And he moved from Kentucky to Lamar County.
Hmm.
Now, Lamar County, the Sam Bell Maxey House, the state historic site in Paris, that's where all of everything happens in crepe myrtles. And then they had a fire there and destroyed half the town in 1916. Then in 1936, they planned them again. And in 1997, the 75th Texas legislator declared the crepe myrtle as the official state shrub of Texas.
Really?
Yes. and the Texas purple sage was deemed the official state native shrub, but it also designated Paris as the state's official crepe myrtle city, and Lamar County is crepe myrtle county capital.
Really?
And then, of course, the legislature also named Waxahachie as the crepe myrtle capital of Texas.
Huh.
Now, crepe myrtle, Waxahachie has every flower in the world. You know, this last year they had, what was it? Was it 1,000 or 2,000 of all those plants, tulips? They had, I believe, 1,000 or 2,000 tulips, I believe, for everybody to go see. They have every kind of flower. It's just a flower country. But now, what I was going to talk about is the way people are destroying their crepe myrtles.
Really?
It's called the crepe murder. Murder of crepe myrtles.
Murder.
It's a big issue. People don't realize you do not prune crepe myrtles. It causes disease. It causes rot. It will ruin your crepe myrtles. The authorities on it say, if you want a small one, you buy a small one. You ask them what size it's going to grow to. don't cut back a crepe myrtle. They said they'd started maybe in Mexico with the Spanish. They were using it to provide fuel, maybe. Maybe that's why they did.
Hmm.
But it says it's depending who's welding the saw. They say they cut off their crepe myrtles because they're too tall.
Really?
Well, buy one that's the right size. Don't plant one that's going to grow 30 foot.
So they need to find out ahead of time so that, because there's no point in planting one and it grows taller than you think, you chop it down and you've ruined it.
That's right. The pruning ones, and this will attract bark scale, black mold. It's almost a death sentence for your crepe myrtles.
Man, they're too pretty to do that to them.
Yeah, and you're wasting time. You're adding to landfills. It's also dangerous. Chainsaws and lighters don't mix very well.
Trust me, I know. I learned that the hard
way. And they tell me the only thing is remove the dead wood and leave them alone. And don't go about murdering your crepe myrtles because they're too beautiful.
Wow. That's a shame.
I didn't realize people were getting in there and murdering those crepe myrtles by chopping all those bushes down.
I know. I didn't even know it was so widespread that they had a name for it.
Well, yes. The crepe murders. People are murdering their crepe myrtles.
Wow.
And they need to leave them alone. But you need to go to Lamar County, to Paris, Texas, and to Waxahachie and see the beautiful varieties of crepe myrtle. There's now 110 varieties.
That's amazing. I didn't have a clue. I thought there was like literally one, and that was it.
You thought it was those beautiful pink ones, didn't you?
Yeah. I mean, and they're all this. You know, you run across one of those, and it's the most. If you don't mess with it, if it's in its natural state and it just kind of grows and you let it do its thing, they are some of the most beautiful things. Even the one that are, 8, maybe 10 feet tall, I've seen them as high as that. I had no idea they got up to, 30 feet?
Yes, they do. If you buy the large ones, that thing is going to get 30 foot. But if you buy the smaller ones, it'll make a wonderful bush, and they're just, oh, my gosh, there's nothing prettier than a crepe myrtle.
Yeah, you got
that
right.
They're hard to grow. Now, they are hard to grow.
Uh-huh.
You have to have the right water, the right shade, but they'll do beautiful if you just leave them alone.
Yeah. Let nature take its course in that case.
That's right. And, of course, I recommend Waxahachie a lot because of the beautiful flowers in Waxahachie. They have some of the most beautiful flowers in the world. And they have all these times you can go in the spring and see all this, especially the tulips.
I remember you talking, it was like a million tulips or something like that.
Huge amount that blooms. And they have these open to the public for weeks at a time in the spring.
Wow, that's amazing.
And they're just so beautiful. But, and of course, East Texas has its dogwood. Texas is lucky to have as many things of beautiful nature that they have.
Yeah, that's the truth.
And, of course, the crepe myrtle is one of my very favorites, And I can't think anybody could have too many. But I hate to think about them murdering them and cutting all these bushes down. You don't prune a crepe myrtle.
I know it. We had in one of our houses, we had one of those, you know, red pinkish crepe myrtles in the courtyard. It was, I guess, the landscapers put it there when they did the landscaping for us. And it was the first thing. I mean, you would look at the house, and that was the first thing that draws your eye in. No matter, you know, how, you know, grand the house may be, no matter how many other landscaping features you've got, people are going to look at that crepe myrtle the first thing. They stand so majestic, and the colors are so bright. It's one of those things that's just, it just draws you in, you know?
It does, and it's so beautiful. That, like you said, that's the first thing a person's going to notice is your crepe myrtles.
Yeah.
And not everybody can grow them. And you have to have really good soil for them. But if you can grow them, they're just majestic, and they'll stand out. And they'll be there beautiful forever if you just don't murder them.
Yeah, yeah. Do not prune your crepe myrtle.
No, because it will not be there very long.
Wow.
The black mold will take over, and all these insects, and it'll just go away. But if you leave your crepe myrtle alone, it'll be beautiful forever.
Well, you know, I know a lot of people are used to, like, you know, pruning, you know, some small trees and things like that, and they're designed, they're made for that type of thing. But it sounds like a crepe myrtle is much more sensitive. It's much more soft than some of these other, you know, trees that we're used to pruning and cutting down. So people need to take extra care.
That's right. It was not meant to be that way.
Wow.
It was not meant to be pruned and hacked down. So if everybody leave them alone, it'll do very good for many years to come.
And where's that? Where are they all located?
In Paris, Texas, Lamar County. And that is, you've got your state historical deal of for Lamar County for the crepe myrtles. And the legislature did that in 1997. It was the 75th Texas legislature declared the crepe myrtle as the official state shrub. And, of course, Lamar County is the state's official crepe myrtle city.
Well, I definitely feel another road trip coming on.
Yeah, and it's crepe myrtle county capital. Everything is in Lamar County, which is Paris, Texas.
Is there, and I'm putting you on the spot here, is there a best time of year to go see them, you know, like maybe in the spring, or are they good anytime?
To me, it's spring and summer.
Mm-hmm.
That's going to be when it's the prettiest.
Yeah. All right.
Yeah, you want to get it in spring and summer.
Well, definitely that's going on the plans here in the next several weeks. This is Your Money with Faye Bagby. Your phone number is?
It's 877-588-3330. That's 877-588-3330. And we're at 3105 Big Spring, right next to Ivy Cottage.
And your website, I should throw this in again real quick, AmericanFinancialMidland.com. People can find all kinds of information, see exactly what investors have been making in this type of investment. Now, we're talking about the life settlement. People can invest in a life insurance policy. Explain real quick, before we get into the risks of this, explain real quick, where does the profit margin come from? How does actually this turn into a profit for people?
Okay, whatever we buy it for, let's say it's $1 million policy. It's the difference between what we pay for it and $1 million.
Okay.
That's their profit. It's between, like if we paid $750,000 for that policy, that's their profit between the $750,000 and $1 million. Okay?
Okay. And so, to oversimplify a pretty simple process, all people have to do, they invest in the life insurance policy and wait for it to mature. That's literally it, right?
That's it. And then when we have notice of the maturity, we let all the clients know that they've had a maturity. We let them know this. And then we let them know again when it has reached their bank.
Mm-hmm.
And it takes usually 6 weeks to 8 weeks for us to get all the everything from either the state or the funeral home. We have to have certified death certificates. We can put the package together. And again, then Nevada Trust sends in the death certificate for us, all the claim package. They send that to the carrier. And usually the carrier pays within about 12 to 15 days.
That's fast.
I think it's very fast. All the life insurance companies, they've got the money. They are ready to pay. And when you turn in the claim, they process it and they pay you, and there's never a problem. These people are big, and they can do it.
So there's a lot of things that are going on. There's a lot of moving parts with this type of investment, but it sounds like there's other entities that will take care of a lot of the paperwork, a lot of the process. They'll handle it, so the investor doesn't really have to do a whole lot. This is not a highly interactive investment. It's not going to take a lot of time from people, right?
No, it doesn't. It's a passive investment. In other words, they've made the investment. Then we let them know when it's matured, that they've got money coming. We let them know when it gets to the bank, and then we just simply reinvest it and go from there.
Okay. When people come and do this investment for the first time, I'm sure they probably have a lot of questions. I'm sure as time goes on, people don't do, I should probably ask instead of just assume, but people who have invested, you know, after maybe their second or third, you know, they start getting into different policies. Do they want to see the policy and really understand it and dissect it, or do they just kind of go based on the Fay filter and it's like, if this is available, it's a good policy, put me in?
Well, we do this. We send out the complete health on this, and we tell them this is the health information. Read it and get back to us and tell us if you want to go in this policy. They may have questions. I had a gentleman yesterday that was signing. He'd already said yes, and we were doing contracts. And so when he got to the office, he called and said, I had a question. And I answered his question. He said, that's all I wanted to know. And he was signing his contracts right then. But he had a question before he signed his contract. So I answered the question. He got it done, and that's all there was to it.
All right. Let's get into the risks, Fay, because, you know, this is it's a wonderful opportunity. We've laid out all of the maybe not all, but a lot of the benefits of a life settlement investment. But there are three major risks involved, and people need to know these as they go in.
That's right. The major risk is it could go over. If you're not prepared for it to go over, it's not for you. So if you couldn't stand it, if it went a year or 2 years over, it's not the right investment. So you have to be prepared for that. That's your biggest risk. The second risk is it's not liquid during the time it's invested. And everybody should know that. It cannot be liquid when you've just bought a policy from someone. You've put up your money with the rest of the investors to buy this policy. So it's in a life insurance policy. That's your second risk. The third is if a life insurance company ever went under. And in Texas, we've never had one go under. And as I said, as far as I know, anyone that's ever got in trouble, someone buys that policy. They will buy that company. Because with the premium income, they are worth a lot of money.
So there are several, you know, plan Bs and plan Cs in case something happens. There usually is a contingency.
There is always a contingency.
All right. What about policies that are on the horizon? I know typically in past years, we've talked about how sometimes the first quarter can be a little bit slow because there are other companies that are out bidding on these policies. They like to generally, correct me if I'm wrong, but it's my understanding they generally blow their budget first quarter and then they kind of start to slack off on policies the rest of the year. So I know things have changed a little bit, or at least it sounds like they have in the entire landscape. So how is policy availability different?
Well, we bid on a lot of big policies this week. We've bid on some $1 million policies. We haven't bid on any small policies, but we've bid on several $1 million policies and some $2 million policies. And we'll see if we get the bid. I know we're looking good on one of them already. I don't know if we'll get it, but we were the high bidder the first of the week. So the bid usually takes about a week for all the bids to get in. So we'll see how that comes out. But we've got several big policies I think we'll be closing on.
As you bid on these policies, do you have a threshold going in that says I'm not going to bid higher than this because it cuts into profit margin? How does that work?
Yes. We know how much we can go. And the other thing is when we're bidding a policy, we're worried about premiums, so we've got to keep the premiums down. And, in fact, I turned two down this week. I liked the policies, but the premiums were higher, and I was a little bit afraid of that. So the policies we bid have very low premiums.
All right. So you're actually taking a number of factors into consideration when you bid on these things.
There's a lot of consideration to take into account when you're bidding.
And the reason is we should probably clarify. The reason is because, you know, you want to make sure there's a really good, healthy profit margin for people to make some money.
That's right. And if it should go over, you want to make sure the premium is easy to pay. It's not very much.
To do the life settlement, people have to be accredited. And I'm
That's
not sure
exactly
everybody
right.
knows what that means.
To be accredited, you must make $200,000 a year, or you must be worth $1 million without your home.
Okay.
And that can include your IRA, your 401, your cattle, horses, rent property, you know, all of the above, your savings, everything except your home that you live in. You cannot count that.
Okay. And one final question before we wrap up. If somebody is not accredited, but they still want to, you know, grow their wealth, they still want to do something proactive for their retirement or to grow their wealth, what options do they have?
I would suggest an annuity. You know, they've been around 150 years. They're safe. We do annuities that are fixed rate annuities and index annuities. We do not do variable annuities. Variable annuities is just like you're in the stock market. You know, there's fees, all kinds of things. So we do fixed and index annuities. And they pay well. They've paid well over the years. We've kept account of what all of our clients have made. They've done well.
And so people should probably come talk to you, find out what approach is best for their individual case, right?
That's exactly right.
All right. So how are you on availability for appointments this week or really the next couple weeks? Are you available?
Yes, we have availability. We'll be taking appointments first of the week.
Okay. And one last time, Faye, what is your phone number for people to call and make an appointment?
Okay. It's 877-588-3330. That's 877-588-3330.